There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi guys, welcome to Adulting. This week I'm joined by Jessica Foster Q.
Well, gosh, well said.
What? Your name?
You just said my surname right.
Was it
no
good?
One ever does that. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I think probably because I've practiced doing my own name. She's quite hard.
Yeah.
So Jessica is a comedian. She's also a fellow podcaster.
Yeah.
What other strings do you want to add to your bow? You just told me
actor.
Loads of stuff you do, actually. You were talking about writing,
yeah,
producing.
Oh, I don't do any producing.
What did you organise someone's show?
Oh, I direct some
directing.
Shows
that's
the yeah, that's the one. Yes,
the same.
Like, oh gosh, don't you? I do not produce. Oh, I direct. Yes, it's very similar. I think it probably. It's just helping people with writing their Edinburgh shows. Sometimes I do.
That's fab.
Which is that.
And so I actually reached out to Jessica to come on Adulting, and then she was like, "Let's do my podcast too." So I've been
in
your
done
house.
That. We've been polyamorous.
Yeah, we have. I love that. And now we've kind of talked about everything in the world. And I've forgotten.
We'll find some more things.
We've got some
about.
More things. So the main ethos for this podcast, Jessica's podcast, is all about your relationship with food, eating.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain a bit more what you do about it?
Yeah, I mean, my only concern with saying that is it's just about eating. And
yes.
My only concern to say it's about your relationship with food is because I think that sounds like it's more of an informed thing than it is.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
a comedian and not a nutritionist or a therapist or anything like that. So it's just, it's all about, I think there's enough things in the world about food, and I think lots of people are very confident about saying, I mean, almost everyone says I love food.
Yes.
But not many people say I love eating.
Yeah.
I don't really care what it is. I like the act and the feeling.
Yeah.
And I really do. I really love eating as much as I love food. I don't hate food. I wouldn't just eat a shoe. But I do, I think there's room in the world for a little bit more honesty and a little bit more joy to be taken
yes.
out of this thing which we've made very emotionally complicated. I say we've made, it's been imposed on us in a million ways. But just remembering that eating is a social thing, a fun thing, a necessary thing, a way of loving. Lots of incredibly positive and brilliant things. And also, I think eating's something that everybody's got, like, interesting or funny or moving stories and opinions about.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's why someone who's totally unqualified in any kind of, in terms of how healthy things are or mental health issues around eating is doing a podcast about eating.
But that was when I first listened to it and you literally said that thing of, I don't just love food, I love eating. Mm. I've now tell everyone, anyone I meet, that there's this women's podcast and I love it because you say that, because that's exactly how I feel and I've never had the words to say it, because people say I love food and I'm like, no, I really love food. And this person who told me they love food will like pick at a starter. I think you don't love food. They do love food. They don't love eating. And that's
yeah.
like, I've never heard anyone put it like that.
Yeah.
And that's
they've tasted it now.
Yes.
And they're fine. And they're
weird.
Stop.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But as you say, like, everyone has this relationship with food, which is much more complex because there's also like a massive shame attached to admitting mm-hmm. that you might find food difficult, which is quite lovely because you talk about it really openly on the podcast
yes.
that you're like, it is a really complicated relationship. And as you say, it's that you've mentioned a few times as well, the problem of, if you have an issue with food, you can't just stop eating.
Yes.
Because you literally have to eat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you become addicted, not that, I've got no idea about, in terms of food addiction or any of those things. I don't know whether those are real things. Even, they might be. But I think that, if you have a problem with how much alcohol or you drink or if you smoke or if you use, a recreational drug to excess and you know you need to stop or it's harming you, as a rule, the advice is to stop.
Yeah.
And you can't with eating.
No.
And so it makes it, I think, a million times more complicated. So it's this relationship. Also, if you're in any bad relationship, you walk away. All
yeah.
the people who love you will say, please stop drinking. Please leave that man who hurts you. I don't know why I made it a man. Could be anybody hurting anybody. I mean, probably because it usually is. but yeah, right, you can't do that with eating. And so it's that relationship you have to stay in.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what makes it special and horrific.
Definitely. And do you, how's your relationship with food changed? What was your motivation to... The podcast, as you say, is about enjoying food, but you must have got to a place where you were able to talk about it enough.
Yeah.
Without it being kind of...
So I had a really interesting thing where some years ago I... do you mean historically from childhood and stuff?
Or just whenever?
I've always been in a heavy body, not a fat body. I have had a fat body. I've never had a thin body. I've had times where I've disordered, even very young, from like 11,
yeah.
10 or 11. Probably about 8, 9, I was in a fat body. And about 10 or 11, I just stopped eating. I probably started listening to horrible things in diet culture and stuff. I would start sometimes making myself sick and I would starve myself. I remember long patches of just having an apple a day with my friends, and I would kind of goad each other on to see how little we could eat. And I passed out a few times. And that's probably the smallest body I ever got in. And everyone in my family got very worried. There's a teenage boy shouting. It's his friends in the road.
I literally love, we're as we start recording, someone starts playing the drums.
I'm trying to talk about my small and my fat body. Even with that, though, I remember when I was 11 going on holiday with my mum and dad, who were 100% on the rocks at the time. It's just before they properly broke up, but maybe they'd even broken up, but we decided to have a family holiday. We were on a Greek island and I just hadn't been eating. And I remember being coaxed back in. I'd just have my one meal. I'd just get a side salad at dinner time or a coleslaw or something while they had dinner and just eat that. And then I remember the day it broke, I just had 4 ice creams. And my dad was like, do you want another one? Do you want another one? And I was like, yes, 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 yes. And it just sort of stopped then. And the mists cleared a bit. But I always... would flip in and out. So then I spent, I'd say, from my teens until my late 20s in a very familiar cycle of restricting and binging, restricting and binging, restricting and binging. All the while not really paying that much attention to myself, occasionally paying attention to my body. My body would change very drastically. I would go up to, I don't know, I won't mention numbers. Yeah. I would go up to definitely being in a definitely a fat body. And I would go down never to being this thin body. But anyway, it would be very fluctuant. I remember being very interested that when I got to university at 18, I was in catered halls. And for the first time in my life, I had a lot of routine kind of imposed on me.
Yeah.
And I would have breakfast and dinner at the same time every day. And because I didn't have any money, I would eat big, big breakfast and dinner, but I'd have the same thing. The catered halls, the food was horrid.
Yeah.
So, and I love every food, but I would have like, the breakfast is fine, just, you know, some whatever, loads of toast and some muesli, like tons and fruit and everything. And then at dinner, I'd end up having, because the food was so rank, a jacket potato every single day for an academic year.
Wow.
And I was exercising a lot and stuff. And it was, I was also heartbroken. And in that year, I lost a lot of weight. And I hated how differently people spoke to me when I
really
lost
noticed
a lot of
that.
I had a boy, I'm going to say boy, was a boy. We called him Tory Dave.
Oh, God.
And eventually Fascist Dave. He had a Union Jack flag on his door.
Oh, no.
And he liked Margaret Thatcher. And he...
What uni were you at?
London School of Economics.
Okay. And, difficult.
Yeah, and I was in intercollegiate halls, but he was at LSE. Course he was. I bumped into him on the tube actually not long ago.
Did you?
Yeah, I pretended I hadn't seen him, but he said hello.
God.
I thought we weren't ever friends. He came up to me and said, I just want to say I think a transformation in your body is incredible. And I phoned my mum and told her she could be doing so much better. And I gave you as an example. And I thought, you disgusting piece of shit. And that was even at 18 that I was able to hear that.
That's so interesting.
Quite disgusting. And I remember just saying, I said something to him like, I'm still the same person, Dave. That's really rude.
That's really, right, I've got so many things I want to ask you about. But with that, that's so interesting. Because when I first did my whole transformation thing that I talked about with you, and people listening probably know that I had a personal trainer, lost loads of weight. Loads of my guy friends, who I still love to this day, were like, oh my God, Anoni, you look amazing. And I loved it. I didn't once think, this is so oppressive, I'm suddenly in a smaller body and men now find me more attractive because I'm more diminished or whatever.
Do you know, I didn't find men finding me that more attractive. And I think it's weird because I think I grew up in the countryside where this is amazing. I still think, I don't know whether it's still like this, and maybe it's just what it was like in the 80s and 90s, I'm 35. That people just didn't care as much about what you look like.
Right.
You still had all the same horrible pressures of dieting and stuff. Yeah. But I had a most incredibly good looking boyfriend. He was a geek. But I, when I was at my biggest, I was never short of male attention. Yeah. I genuinely, and so I think that's the reality of it in places where appearance isn't that important.
No, but
it was brilliant. And then I got to London for uni and was like, oh, I think people have slightly different view on this here. So it wasn't that so much that change of attention. I think I would have been flattered by, you know, being feeling fancied more. It was that he genuinely seemed to be implying I had succeeded in life in some way.
But
become smaller.
I don't think I necessarily was fancied. How do I explain it? So I still think I still had male attention as well. But it was like when I got thinner, it was that thing of being like, oh, well done, you've arrived. Like, this is where you should have always been. Because I never felt like no one fancied me before. But when I lost weight, it was like, oh, look, she's here now. Yeah. Like, you've done it. And I wasn't aware. Now, if someone said to me, if I lost loads of weight and someone said, you look really good, that would irritate me.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the insight then.
No.
So I think at 18, for you to know that is quite...
I remember just being,
aware.
Yeah, maybe.
No,
I think after that, though, then I just sort of just naturally put a couple of those stone back on. And then I've stayed around that. In that body, roughly, you know, give or take a pregnancy, ever since. And I love moving my body, love it. I occasionally fall out of love with it briefly.
Yeah.
I did during my pregnancy. But I think now I'm in a place where so essentially, I've been on a very, very long, slow road to the enlightenment I currently feel in terms of my relationship with eating and my relationship with my body. And I'm still on that journey.
So what is the enlightenment that you found? Where's the place that you're at?
I have, I'm kind of quite vegan, but nowhere near completely. Mm-hmm. I have quite a planty diet. I love cooking. I love eating it. I love eating loads. I love move. If I've got time to move my body every day, I feel like I've been given the most precious gift. I love it. I don't love looking. I think it's just my personality. I'm not interested really in buying clothes and having photos taken of myself or watching myself as myself on things. But I don't mind what I see in the mirror. Some days I quite like it.
Yeah.
I feel confident in my bones. I think because I know I'm really strong and well.
Yeah.
So beyond that, I don't really care. I'm kind of in my life at the moment, I'm in a long-term relationship, so I don't particularly care how much people want to go on me or not.
Yeah.
I just feel physically, I feel very powerful at the moment. I don't overthink what I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
I plan in terms of sort of how I'm self-employed, so my life's very hectic and chaotic. I should say chaotic. It's not very routine. So I roughly plan in terms of shopping and cooking what I'll have time to do when. But I don't, you know, I don't wake up in the morning and think I'll have this much of this and that much. I never wear anything. Including myself. I think that's probably covers it. And then, I try and be faintly, oh no, I won't say faintly. I try and be really, without ever putting too much pressure on myself, because I don't believe really in any absolute rules, which to some people is very stressful, but to me that's where I found my happy place.
Yeah.
But I try and be mindful about where my food has come from. So I eat lots of planty stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm definitely not an absolute vegan. I still eat fish. If it's got that MSC label on it, I still eat eggs.
Yeah.
Especially if I've got them from my mate Benji's farm back in Dorset, where I'm from. You know,
yeah, yeah,
I,
yeah.
I, I, I'm very lucky that I've got all these
make
choices.
Those choices. Yeah. Okay, a few things I want to ask you.
Yeah.
I'm going right back to the beginning when you started talking.
Okay, great, great, great.
When you were 8, 9,
yeah.
And as you're saying that, it just reminded me that I remember reading, I don't know where I read it, about this girl that used to eat like 5 raisins a day and she'd cut them up. And I remember thinking, oh, I could do that. That's a really great idea.
Mm.
Where was it?
Oh my God, you've just reminded me. Well, for one patch, I would eat only a banana a day and I would break the banana up like in slices, and then I would break each slice into like quarters so that I could eat it extremely slowly.
But what was it, because it doesn't sound like your parents were the catalyst for you wanting to not eat, or were they, like where did that come from? was it to do with your body, do you think, or do you think it was just you get to a certain age and suddenly you're aware that girls aren't really eating, do you not really know?
There was an element of that, but actually, no, I think it was definitely disordered eating from a place of bad mental health, even as a little kid. So, how can I say?
Are you happy
it?
To talk about that?
Yes, I'll find a way of saying it. I mean, I can. So, I had one parent who, let's just keep it vague, I had one parent who, though they had a great relationship with food, eating, so was an inspiration in that sense, had totally, you know, it sounds ridiculous to say, but very qualified mental health issues, in the sense that a string of bad things happened to all my parents. So, and then they didn't, I suppose they didn't not cope with it well, but ultimately there was a little bit of trauma going on at home around that age, when I was about 9, 10. Also, my parents broke up around that time. But in terms of the most textbook reason, the other parent came from a mum who was Austrian and basically brought up in such abject poverty in the war, on the wrong side, which is embarrassing. But
I've heard you talk about this. Yeah,
she was the most. I mean, she was the most fascinating and brilliant and generous character. Did my grandmother.
No.
I did a grief cut, a podcast called Grief Cast, where I spoke about
it. Do you know, I'm so embarrassing. I think I've listened to like everything.
listened
to Gary Adloyd, yeah.
But yeah, because she was brought up in such abject poverty, she found fatness disgusting and would talk about that all the time. But confusingly, the most insane feeder I have ever met. She would not stop offering you food all the time. So as a result, my dad has taken on that mantle. He would take the piss out of her and still will, you know, take the piss out of what she used to be like. She's no longer with us. But he's exactly the same. You'll walk past a fat child on a beach and he'll make jokes about that sea manatee, that he'll make horrible fat shaming jokes even about a child. But when you're hanging out with him, and his relationship with food is basically awful, he'll be like, when you're hanging out with him, he'll be like, do you want a biscuit? Do you want a donut? Do you want a biscuit? Do you want a sandwich? Do you want some leftover macaroni cheese? Do you want something like, and his fridge is like piling out with stuff that's half gone off.
Is he overweight?
Got no sense of smell. No, and he's never been overweight.
Interesting.
So,
he feeds but doesn't eat.
Sort of. I think he has patches. He would call himself overweight when he's got a slightly wobbly tummy.
I don't think that's uncommon though, because I think fat phobia, it's only really now that we're properly talking about it as it's a real thing. Because I think right up until about 4 years ago, you could have made any kind of fat phobic joke in any situation, no one would
totally,
have reacted.
Yeah. And you probably still can in those places, just not in our media bubble.
But then at the same time, if it's your child, obviously you'll want to give them things, and giving food is one of the most caring things you can do for someone. So I don't think that's as antithetical as it's like, do you know, in a funny way, that makes complete sense.
It's from a place of kindness.
Sense.
Yeah. So my dad and I had a massive fallout when my son was only 4 months old. We all went on holiday together, which my dad kindly paid for it. He'd got his redundancy money and he very kindly took us all to Venice. It was an absolute disaster. In the sense that he was at the time going through some heartbreak, and he was in a vile mood, and he was very fucking horrible to everybody who was there. And I was like, we have to have a conversation about it. And we got home, we had this big argument, and I didn't talk to him. And this is bearing in mind his first and only grandchild is a tiny baby. I didn't talk to him for like 3 or 4 months afterwards. I was like, this is a horrible man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't love him more. It's my dad, you know, but he's a horror show in some ways. But he was just very, very unhappy. and not being nice because of that unhappiness. So if I was really empathetic, he had his shit to deal with.
Yeah.
Anyway, we didn't talk for a really long time. And the way I knew that we had made up, he would never say sorry. He will never say sorry. He cannot. I think maybe three times in my life and two of them were on text messages that said the words, I love you. He can't do it in words. He can just do it hammered in a text. You know what I mean? And the way I knew we'd made up after this fallout is we went for a coffee where we pretended it hadn't happened and we talked all the way through it. And then he went, oh, by the way, this is for you. And he handed me a plastic bag full of food.
That's amazing.
He was like, this is for you and Mikey and Rudy. And it was just some ready meals and some stuff that he'd made.
But
just a random bag of supermarket shopping for me to take back to London.
But that's textbook dads that
you're forgiven.
That like haven't been taught how to show emotional.
Yeah.
Because my dad does that. I know that he'll be trying to say something and go, do you need any money? And I'm like, no. Like, that is his way of going, like, is everything okay? Oh, how are you? Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have the language for it, but he's provided for our family since we were little. Like, he's the breadwinner.
Yeah.
So the way he gives to the family is money. And now I'm like, no, I couldn't think of anything worse. I don't want
my dad
money.
Used to do that as well a little bit when he was still working. When I was a student, in London and he worked in London then. And we used to meet every week, not religiously, but almost every week. And we'd go for Wagamama's for lunch.
Amazing.
And it was lovely. But one time I'd been down to his house with my half siblings and we'd had a Sunday lunch. And I can't remember what body I was in at the time, but his daughter, Amy, my half sister, was only like two or three at the time. And she was quite a naughty toddler. And she said once, we just had dinner and the question was coming up of who was going to have seconds. And Amy, as a toddler, went, Jess, Daddy says you're a big fat pig. Daddy says you're a fat, greedy pig. Like, and in that way, I was like, oh, she's put you in that there, Dad.
Oh, God.
Like, that's exactly how Dad would talk about someone who ate a lot whilst having been the person
that made you eat a lot.
And I was absolutely devastated, even though it wasn't surprised. You know, you look back now, of course that's how my dad would speak about me.
Yeah.
Of course that is how he would speak about me. But, you know, even at 20, whatever I was, maybe 19, I was like, I'll address this. And we went out for lunch in London to Wagamama's. And I said to him, by the way, Amy, you know, she dropped you in it, didn't she, last time I was down? And he couldn't bear it. He can't bear that conversation. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, she said that you call me a big fat pig, a greedy pig. That you're a greedy pig. That's what Amy, and he said, I would never say that. He couldn't bear it. He was just like, that is not how I talk. I've never said that. She's made it up.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay. He's like, she's always making stuff up. And I'd never say that. And I was like, okay, well, there we go. And then anyway, we moved on. We spoke about everything else under the sun to get over the awkwardness. And then at the end of lunch, out of nowhere, he was like, oh, this is for you. And just gave me £100.
Oh, my God. That is really funny. Just pay. It's like paying for your forgiveness.
Funny. I took it.
You've got to.
Student.
That is really funny. But there's so many things there that I think, like, even my mum does it to me now, and she'll be like, God, it's so, what's she called? Like, you're like a gannet. Is that, do you ever get that?
Yeah.
Don't stop eating. And I find it really funny. And it must be down to their parents having had that restriction.
Yeah.
Because like, I just want to eat everything and like all of it. If I have a packet of Haribo, I want to eat the whole packet.
Yes.
I don't understand people that don't want to do that. Whereas my mum's the other way around. She's like, you can't just eat the whole packet of sweets. And I'll be slowly stuffing the empty packet into the car door like, fuck, I hope she doesn't see I've already eaten it. We've just got in the car. And that's definitely, it's nothing about body weight. It's nothing, but it's about the actual act of eating. It's not about the food. It's the actual act of, that's impacted me a lot when I was younger without her realising that conversation around greediness when but it would be really the wrong context to use the greediness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I feel like now we're coming into such a different conversation. We were talking about earlier about the conversation surrounding like fatter bodies and fatness and eating. And I think it's such murky waters in terms of how I barely talk about food on my Instagram anymore because it's too political and too politicized. But when it comes to your relationship with food now, do you feel like you're still battling or trying to figure out what the right way to eat is or...
No, I think I know what the right way to eat is, but I don't. I'm always able to do it.
Right.
But I also don't care.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I don't care. In fact, I remember having a funny conversation. So the reason I have therapy and I've been through my disordered eating with my therapist, and we'll sometimes go back to her with it and we'll catch up on how that's going and stuff. But many years ago, I had a therapist after a heartbreak, and sort of quite apropos of nothing, it seemed to me, she said, I think maybe we've been talking about drinking, so it wasn't at all, but I'm quite good at just, when I'm very, very low, even just a bit low, I'm quite good at responding to my emotional state when it's bad by stopping drinking.
Yeah.
Not forever, obviously, so far, but, you know, just going like, a week or two
that's
off the lash.
Yeah,
completely, you know. It's definitely making it worse, you know. I want to feel how I feel about this. I'm very aware that that's booze good. Can stop you doing it. I find that much harder to do with eating anyway. I didn't know that at the time, and I'd never addressed it, and I was in this therapy session and she said, what about eating, should we talk about that? And I was like, sure. And she was like, so how are you with eating? And I was like, great, I love it, bloody love it, absolutely fucking love it, mate. And you know, and she was like, well, tell me what you've eaten today. And I honestly felt like she said, show me your vagina. It felt like the most intrusive question. I felt like being slapped around the face. I was just like, dare you? And I can't remember what I'd eaten that day. I don't think I'd had 15 pies. It was only halfway through the day. But the shame.
Oh, yeah.
This wall of shame that came up when it came to someone asking me to give a list of what I'd consumed. And I don't know, I genuinely, it's a hazy memory, but I think she moved on pretty quick. I wasn't ready to deal with it. But then years later, and I'm start doing a podcast about eating, I thought, actually, do you know what? I better address that shit.
Yeah.
So I got into it. You know, I got into it probably about 6 months before starting the podcast with my current shrink. And I remember again kind of being a little bit sideswiped by her, but she was spot on. You know, I talking about it, saying, I'm pretty sure I've got issues. And then she was like, well, here's some literature. I have CBT now, which is very sort of hands-on. She was here's some literature. And the literature was all called binge eating disorder. And I was like, excuse me? And the therapist before actually had given me an amazing book called Fat as a Feminist Issue.
I need to read that. Apparently it's so
but
good.
The original version, which she gave me, like one of the 1970s versions, and it just had this massive neon writing on it that said, a self-help guide for overeaters. So I'd be reading that on the train with like my hands over the cover,
that's
like,
so
for fuck's
funny.
Sake. A little bit embarrassing, or is it, you know? Anyway, it's been a long fucking journey, and I would say that I am now in a place where I'm better than I've ever been. I've got work to do, and the work I need to do is to make more time for my eating, just so I can be slower and more listening to myself.
Yeah,
but I'm glad that I've got to a point now where I can hear my brain and not my body asking me for more food when I know that my body's full. I can have a really quick and effective conversation with myself about why my brain's asking for that food.
Yeah.
And my brain asks for it a lot.
Yeah, so does mine.
I mean, I've spoken about it on my podcast before, but like initially in the therapy, I know I was expecting all the stuff I was expecting, you know, if I've gotten very anxious, you know, perhaps I've had a horrible gig, textbook, you know, you're miserable if you're very stressed. But then actually the list just grew and grew and grew. And once it was just mild relief. Like I was in town and I'd had a writing job in the day, and then I had a gig that evening. I couldn't really be arsed.
Yeah.
And I got text messages saying it'd been cancelled, and it was just mild relief. And I was on my way home to have dinner with my family. And I was like, genuinely, my brain first thought of the mild relief was, could get a burrito on the way home to have dinner. And I was like, oh, great. Even mild relief.
But do you go one or the other? Because my sister and my mum both stop eating if they're stressed, anxious, whatever. I'm the opposite.
I want it.
Yeah.
Because it's nice and I love it.
Same.
And it's comforting and it feels kind to myself. But what I do know is have that conversation. And even when I've gone, okay, so rationally, your body's full.
Yeah.
Sometimes I still have it and I don't care.
Because food, I think food has got like a few purposes. So I think food is one, it's first and foremost, it's fuel.
Yes.
Then it's enjoyment.
Yeah.
And then what was the other thing?
Bloody teenagers again, sorry.
Oh, they're definitely like five.
Oh, they're about 10 years old. I'm still scared of them.
But yeah, I think I always have to say that because there's certain camps of the way that you have food, and sometimes food's really good for you and it's nutritious, and sometimes it is just because it's fun, and that's fine. It's just you've got to find stop, because sometimes I think you're either in the camp of, a lot of people are either in the camp where everything is fuel and that's like orthorexia, or everything is fun and then you're overeating and you've got to find that hashtag so balance.
Is that like fuel is like the orthorexic spectrum extremist?
Fuel.
Isn't that stuff where you have 3,000 calories a day or whatever, but you just have it as dust for people that don't care about chewing or tasting?
Oh, that sounds awful. Yeah, no, orthorexia.
I mean, it would be our idea.
It's
of
like
hell.
An obsession with healthy eating, so they'll only eat like clean foods. It's not actually. It is going to be qualified as a term disorder. Soon, but it is basically like a thing. And I think I went through that from the other side and came through it. What was I going to say? Really quickly, I've literally just lost my train of thought. Oh, when you were saying about, it's really funny because I did this the other day, someone asked me, what time did you have breakfast and what did you have for breakfast? And I immediately felt, again, like you said, attacked for no particular reason. Yeah. I think I just had a normal breakfast, but my brain was going, if I say that,
why
is
do
that...
you care? Like,
yeah,
why does it matter?
I think there's something attached to women eating that I thought, if I say this, will it sound like I've been restrictive or will it sound like I've overeaten? What are they going to think about what I've eaten? Whereas a man could say they'd had a McDonald's for breakfast or broccoli and kale and everyone be like, that's fine. Whereas I think as a woman, if you say, oh, I had a packet of Starburst or I had whatever, something about it's going to be wrong. You're either going to have had too unhealthy or too healthy. And guys do have these issues, but it's just not every woman I know has had some kind of disordered relationship with something that they eat.
Yeah, it's bleak, but we can work on it. And I think there's the same thing with that. Oh, what is it? I'm going to say it wrong.
Orthorexia.
I almost feel like there's an imperative to keep some junk in your life as well, you know?
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Well,
great vegan junk food out there.
Yeah, there is good. I have tried. But then also calling it, I did this with you earlier, but I'm trying to start not calling things crap, junk, good, bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like
sorry,
taking away, no, don't say sorry. It's like just trying to get that moral wording away from it. Because
you don't
subconsciously,
even think of that as moral wording, but it absolutely is.
It is.
You're calling it rubbish.
Yeah, exactly.
You're calling it rubbish food.
And then you know it makes you feel rubbish.
But then, are we perhaps being a little bit too like making this world also safe? Because if it's nutritionally rubbish, why can't we call it rubbish food but not care that we've had some rubbish food?
Yeah, I know. Well,
we've been like, look, I definitely got no vitamins off that, you know, or whatever, like deep fried item. But it was blooming delicious. So it had value in that way.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But then it's the problem of, I get this all the time, it's what angle you're coming at it from.
Yes,
so
if
it's
true.
Someone,
if you're a health person like you, but I'm just a clown.
Yeah.
And I reserve the right to call it junk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you just have to be, it's because you don't know who's reading it or what they're thinking. Because then you will, if you call it junk food, there'll be some people who'll be like, oh my God, I won't eat it because it's junk food. Do you know what I mean?
So you sort of have to have I will have to have the caveat of saying, I think it's nice to eat rubbish sometimes.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
I think
if anything, keep your hand in on the rubbish front, whatever you're doing.
But there's people who, I was listening to someone going, they were like, I don't have sugar. Mm. And I was like, there's no way in hell you're not having sugar because there's sugar in, you can't not be having sugar. You might not be eating sweets, but there is sugar in naturally occurring sugars in pretty much like,
oh God,
so many
I mean,
things.
Especially, so my son's three now and there's so many stuff.
So many stuff.
There we go. Glad I got that degree. There's so many things that say no added sugar. And you're like, yeah, because it's already full of it. Because it's mainly dates or
so
it's whatever.
Funny.
Or it's like compressed.
That's where the morality thing's so funny. Because people will be like, oh, have this like healthy bar or whatever.
It's not healthy.
And they'll be... Well, it might be healthy in that it's more nutritiously dense, because that's the other language thing.
How nutritiously dense is a Snickers, though? I mean, they're all muchness to those like trick bars and all of that. I should be careful, actually, shouldn't I?
But that's exactly what I mean. So this is what's really interesting: is there's a difference between something being healthy and something being calorie dense.
Yes.
So we're like, oh, that's healthy, and when people say that, what they mean is it's low in calorie.
Yeah.
But actually, most of the stuff that's low in calorie isn't that healthy because it's got no nutrition in it.
Yeah.
So those bars you buy that are full of dates and nuts and whatever actually are nutritionally dense, got loads of fat and whatever.
Yeah.
But calorie wise, you'd be better off having a Kit Kat.
Yeah.
But we conflate the two. That's why it's got so messy with the language, because we're like, this is healthy. Diet shakes and whatever are because they're low calorie. It's so difficult. But we've completely conflated the language. If you just called a spade and said everything as it is,
yeah.
It would make it a lot easier. But obviously a marketeer's dream.
And also that word healthy. I mean, didn't Pret got a bollocking and had to take healthy off their main logo recently, because they do sell some stuff that isn't. But who's decided that?
Yeah.
It does think, like, do you know what? The word doesn't really mean anything.
No, it doesn't.
It, just on its own.
Yeah.
In context, you know, if you said, I'm training to swim for 6 miles, this Kit Kat is not healthy, you can say probably isn't. You're probably going to have an empty nutritional value from it. You probably get a short high, and then it's not going to help you for swim all that time. You're probably better off having something slow release, whatever, you know. But it's context.
Yeah.
Because actually there's going to be other times where it's like, I just watched my partner get off with someone else. And I'm already full, but wants to feel nice for 10 minutes. That Kit Kat's probably one of, mental health-wise, one of the healthiest things you could possibly do for yourself. But make it a chunky.
Yeah, exactly. No, I completely agree. And it's, but what's stressing me out is that we've got such, well, there's like a fear of being healthy now, because I think we've come so far. For me, actually, let's talk about bodies a minute. For me, what was so exciting, the reason I got into training, was I so resonate with you saying you've always had a heavy body.
Yes.
Because I've never had, you know, when little girls are little girls and they have skinny legs?
Yeah.
I always had legs.
Yeah.
I never had.
Same.
I wasn't like Bambi. I just never had that. So that's where this fat shaming thing started. Because as a little girl, if I looked back, I was tiny. I was a child. Yeah. But I wasn't this skinny little girl that most of the other girls were.
No.
So that's when all the fat, probably around 8, 9, 10, 11, started. Mm-hmm. I wasn't fat. I just was heavy. I had bones and a body.
Yeah.
I always had a little body.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was never, so that started from
and
such a young
age.
People
say big boned, and actually, for me, it's, I've never had anything to do with that. I don't, I think I've got pretty average bones, but I'm muscly. I've been, I've
your
always
athletic
had a muscly
shape.
Set.
Yes.
Always. And my son's got it.
Yeah.
I watch it, and
like,
he's
almost
stacked.
I guess,
you know?
I was like stocky. Yeah. And it was that. So for me, at school, I could never get skinny, no matter how hard I tried. So when I saw like people doing bodybuilding, I was like buzzing. This is like a body shape I can attain.
Yeah.
And that was so exciting for me. So going into that was great. But now we've gone into, in a funny way, it's almost better that we're, it's still about bodies, but it's better that we're coming out of the heroin chic phase that I grew up
God. With. Thank God we're coming out of that.
Yeah, because that was the Effie from Skins and like the massive thigh. That was my thing. But then we're still forcing people into bodies that just don't fit them.
No, exactly. And I think there's an awful lot of people, and it's the end of disordered, it's the part of disordered eating which I still feel like I only hear about and talk about on very specialist podcasts, like Food Psych and stuff like that. But over-exercise is also a type of disordered, you know, you're still a type of self-harm.
Yeah.
You
anything in excess is...
Yeah, you know, and I see my peers sometimes talk about going to the gym 3-4 times a day, and you think, you're not...
Three, four times a day?
But are there someone who... That's how they're telling the world of they're anorexic, this particular person who said that. And I was like, you know, that's really sad. That's
that
not...
That is sad.
You know, they... It's just, that's not ideal, is it?
No.
And you shouldn't... I don't know. I think every now and again I have to check myself on it and go, are you going? Because... Why are you going?
Yeah.
You know, why are you going?
Is it going to make you feel good?
Yeah.
What's it like being in it? Because you are on the TV, you are doing stuff. Well, you've...
I mean, not that often.
you are in a position where you are in the media and you are, I guess it is that industry that does put a lot of pressure on it. Do you feel that or not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I feel a lot of conflict about it, in the sense that I think I know that if I, not that I genuinely am woke enough about it to know that if I were to restrict to the point where I was in the smallest body I could get into.
Yeah.
How do I put it? There's a chance, because of the way the acting industry is, that I would get more work. And I'd say comedy as well. And others would argue with me. My friend Sarah Pascoe is extremely successful, genuinely thinks that, I think there's still a problem with casting TV, women in on TV as comedians even, who are, they're almost all still in very tiny bodies, naturally or through having a terrible life, forcing that upon themselves. But genuinely, really, really sad, miserable people. Or there are people occasionally who are like, I'm fat and deal with it.
Yeah.
Joe Brand. You know. And then, but those of us in between, I don't think there's a hole's been carved yet.
No,
really,
because it's not enough of a mess you had to conform, or you're really anti-conformist.
Yeah, I'm not a statement. I'm not, you know, there's no And there's no need for one. There's no liberation movement on my... There's no hench liberation movement.
But do you know what's so funny?
And there shouldn't need to be. But ultimately, I... So I feel... I do feel a pressure, but I'm not bowing to it. And ultimately, what will probably happen is I will just have a career where... I can feel it happening now. I will do... I will love having acting, but if I get the main parts in things, it will be things I've written. Or because I've hustled my way up as a comedian and I've grown my profile through stuff where my appearance didn't matter, like podcasting, like radio, like writing. And I'll have to find the back, I'll have to come in through the back door.
But I've got an easily societally conventionally body that people like, people follow me for my body. I'm too big for certain. I know for a fact if Jesus I lost weight Christ. And I'm already small that I would get more work. I know that. Isn't that sad? This is one of the reasons why I want to be more. I don't really want to be in the fitness industry in itself is fine, but online, if you're an influencer, like doing, I'm not going to do it. I can't be asked. I know I either go one way and I become body positive, but I'm going to say this. I'm going to try and say it in a really careful way. My body as it looks is a product of me eating and training how I like and feeling good. Mm-hmm. If I put on weight, not because of the weight, but because I wouldn't be happy. Yeah. And because I wouldn't be training or eating how I do that fits. So I don't have to spend it. So either I would have to lose weight in a way that would make me feel uncomfortable or I'd have to put on weight in a way that would make me feel uncomfortable to be body positive, in which case I could, because you can do very well doing that. If I got slightly bigger and was less, I'm again, in my industry, in the middle, like you're in the middle in yours. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So, and I've thought about this before. I thought, well, I could go and do, I've seen girls doing it. I'm like, I could go and do that body positive thing.
Also,
and
the other thing is, if you're happy and you know, I now know.
If you're happy and you don't clap your hands.
If you're happy and you know it, eat what you want.
Yes.
Exercise when you want. And don't give a fuck when your mum makes a comment about your portion size.
Exactly.
Even at Christmas. No, I think it's... it just comes down to... I've lost my own thread.
No, I agree.
The body that you're in, that's what I was going to say. I think just that I do come back to... I haven't weighed myself for so long now. But I did learn from the years of weighing myself and the years of trying and failing at diets or succeeding and then going back, I come back to the same weight.
Your
I'm
body
not
going
to
has
say it because
point.
Someone might go, oh, that's okay. That we're all different.
Yeah.
I come back to a certain weight or within a stone of it.
Yeah.
Depending on the time of the month and blah, 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 blah. And that's the bottom in. And actually... I can still do my career.
Yeah.
But there are going to be elements of it where I'm going to have to trick them.
Yeah.
Or wait for the change, wait for the change, ring the change, call for the change. All we can do.
Yeah.
We mustn't change our bodies from the bodies we're in if we're happy.
Yeah.
And we're being kind to ourselves.
And if everyone did that, then it wouldn't be an issue. But
that
you can see that people aren't in their, you can tell when someone has, do you know what I've noticed? So whenever someone pushes themselves to lose enough weight that they look like they're kind of verging on not being in the right body, you'll suddenly see the babe, oh my God, you look so good, tiny. This is my least favourite thing. Whenever anyone that I follow loses weight, you'll see one of their friends will comment, you look so tiny. You know that's a compliment. That's not, why is that a compliment? You look so tiny. Oh my God, you look teeny tiny, gorgeous, teeny tiny. None of my friends, but people that I follow that are in like celebrities kind of programs and all those, do you know what I mean? It's so funny because that's so outside the scope of what my girlfriends would say or my industry would say, but I follow a lot of people that aren't in my industry and they still got that mindset of like, you look so tiny,
smaller better.
And I can't believe that that's the thing. And you can see that these people don't fit their bodies. You can tell that they're not being healthy and good. You can see when people fit. Do you know what I mean? And I find it really funny because it goes both ways, because I do think with weight, there's nothing wrong. Like, as you said, everyone's got a different set point. There's nothing wrong with someone wanting to be bigger or smaller than they are if that fits their lifestyle.
I agree.
But it's become so polarizing that you can't even, I don't know. I completely agree. I know that I'd be more successful if I was thinner or leaner.
And when we say more successful, we mean we'd be given
more
breaks
money
for other people.
Yes, exactly.
And that's not necessarily success.
No,
we'll
it's
make
not.
Our own.
Yeah.
We'll make
100%.
Own.
You have to make this space. Was it, how much have I listened to you? Was it you saying about, someone else was saying the exact same thing, that only, oh no, actually, Someone was saying they'd have, the only way that they'd get in a part is if they write it themselves. But maybe that wasn't you.
I just said that.
You did. No, you did just say.
Yeah.
No, you literally just said that.
2 minutes ago, mate.
But, I mean, I was listening to something either yesterday or the other day, and someone said the exact same thing. But I can't remember if it was you or if it was a woman of colour talking about in order to make space.
Imagine that as well. Yeah, much worse than my situation.
Yeah, but it is awful that is such a massive. But that's
intersectional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, God. I'm so fucking lucky in a million ways.
Yeah, but
anyway, sorry.
No, you're right. You are lucky. You're great. But yeah, just the conversation around it's because what it is, the implication is, even if you're not fussed about your body, you might get to a really good place where you're like, right, I feel great. I'm body neutral. I'm not actually basing off. Because did you ever used to wake up in the morning and my first thought would be, oh, if I was thin? Like, before I even thought anything else.
Really? Maybe not before I ever thought anything else. But then also, I think I've always had it, in a way it's a gift, but it's very interesting because of the career that I'm in. But I've always given, I think maybe it's the countryside again, not that many fucks about what I look like.
Yeah.
And actually, no, that like that thing where and I, you know, it took me till my it did take me till my teens to get like a pack of female mates. Actually, I think it was a bit of like an oddball. I'd have like one or two friends, but be a bit of a drifter between groups at school. And then in my teens, I got this amazing group of girlfriends, and they're still my friends, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
But I have never been into that, like getting ready for the night out. And I'm out, and my cousins are like, I've got cousins who are brother and sister who are like a brother and sister to me. And meeting up with the girl one, George, especially when she was at uni, and to go out with her and her friends, and they would have to give me stuff to wear. I remember going to see a friend in New York, even in my 20s, and she was like, we're going out, like it's a warehouse club. Yeah. Like, and I was like, I've got a shirt. She'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, wear this.
So much
like, and
time.
Just other people just have to dress me up, and I have to go, all right, I can't bear it. Makeup, couldn't give a fuck. My friend Candice always looks amazing in like, just like, looks effortless. I'm sure it isn't. And I was like, make, I'm starting to get a bit more work where people are looking at me and taking pictures and stuff. Can you take a Saturday morning out and just give me a lesson? And she very sweetly, she's doing pretty well for herself, as a birthday present, instead took me round makeup shops.
Oh, fab.
And had them test shit on my face and that. And like, she bought me one of like, whatever, one of each of the things you have. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I've just, that was about 3 years ago, and I just buy those same four things over and over again. They run out and I buy it again, and they run out and I buy it again. And I don't want to spend any more time. I might occasionally think about lipstick.
I'm actually really jealous, but do you know what? I'm so torn on this because I
sometimes wonder whether it holds me back.
No, because I think you save so much time. But then I also think, I actually, funnily enough, I've thought this before, I enjoy the getting ready for a night out with my girlfriends more than the night out sometimes.
Really?
I find that so much fun.
I do if we're getting drunk.
Yeah, but drinking and getting
and
ready.
And it's like, when you share the rent, I mean, and you're still actually listening to
each other. I think I'm enjoying it because it's like a film. When I, especially in the uni, I live with like seven girls, we'd all be going through each other's wardrobes, throwing all the clothes, like putting loads of outfits on. It literally felt like you were in Clueless. And I can't work out if it's my conditioning or if I, because I'm so conflicted about this gender thing. I'm like, am I really just innately this feminine? Or because some days I'm not, I don't actually give a shit about makeup, but I do quite like putting it on because I feel like,
well, now I think increasingly teenage boys are enjoying that bit, which is lovely.
So, and
it's not
nice.
You know, it's not a gay thing.
No.
There are boys going like, oh, you know, taking time over what they're going to put on. Maybe they won't admit it so much with their friends, but there are boys taking so much care over what they look like that they can't deny that that's
time. I get like feminist shame because I'm like, a little bit, because I think, so for a while I actually kind of was like, I'm not going to wear makeup. I actually was like, but I actually quite like it. And then I was like, fuck it, maybe it is conditioning, but at least I'm aware and I've questioned it. I don't actually care if I have makeup on. I actually just sometimes, especially if I've got a lot of stuff to do, if I put makeup on, it makes me work harder.
Well, I think also you can
psychologically
there's something very interesting about you know, the way you dress up for your psychological mindset, and it does bigger impacts on some people than others. I always put makeup on for a gig.
Yeah,
I've once or twice in 11 years have forgotten my makeup. And when I say put makeup on for a gig, I mean in my car in the dark just before I go in, or in the toilets in front of all the people I'm about to think in front of, or like on the train, all up and around my face with people scowling at me because I should have made the time to do that slowly in front of my own mirror. Whatever. I I've panicked, actually. I've really hated
really?
Having
felt
to
worried.
Go on stage with that. Well, I don't know. I also just think, but with that, I didn't need checking on it. But every now and again, like, my girlfriends from uni, my women friends from uni are all incredible women. They're successful. And like, every now and again, one of them will just like have a little word. I can't remember all my girlfriends. What, two amazing groups of women. And I remember one of the ones from home from Dorset saying to me something once about like, Jess, just take the time to see if there's loads of food or hair in your clothes, or like if your collar's all like down or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. I've just been going out with like half a kebab down my top and like one collar bit half up and down. And I was like, yeah, do you know what I mean? It is worth looking like you've you've got a home and you've taken a shower in the last month. You know, just take the. And I remember once a friend coming to see me at the Edinburgh Festival, and it was, I think I was already doing solo shows. And I was like, I was just going to do my show. And she was like, hang on, are you going to put shoes on? You've got flip-flops on. And I was like, ah, wow. And she was like, how much are the tickets to your show? And then that year, I think they were like a tenner or something. And I was like, she was like, just put some shoes on, Jess. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah.
That is
like,
really
funny. It was just like these little things that they're not throwing shade. They're just people saying to me, take a little bit more care.
It's really
and
interesting.
And I do think there's something good about taking the... It's self-care.
I do
know,
think someone said this on another podcast I was listening to, I was like, so true. They're like, a woman who's really put together is one who smells really nice, but her hair smells different from her body. So she's obviously like, really clean hair and yeah. That's when you know someone's... It's a bit like my sister, she's so put together. And I do think you are a bit too...
Well, this is it. It's a different mindset,
it is,
right?
Because you're like me. I'm quite messy. My sister is a doctor. She'll come into my flat and be like, it's filthy, and it will be, I'll have just spring cleaned. I'll be like, this to me is, she's next level clean.
Right.
I think being messy is a state of mind. And I once put on my story on my Instagram, I was like, do you think it's innate or you can change? And everyone's like, you're a fucking idiot. Of course you can teach yourself to be more organized, more tidy.
Yes.
You can.
Also, it's about your priorities.
But yeah, I just don't think a mess doesn't offend me.
No, it's what you're offended by. But I think genuinely, once you're choosing how you spend your time, how you manage your time, it's about priorities. I did my podcast, a Hoovering podcast, with Faye Ripley off of Cold Feet and many other things. And she was very, very funny. And we had a real laugh. But at one point in the podcast, she said, she was talking about how much more productive some of her friends are than her.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, I turned up to this podcast almost an hour late because I got trapped underground on the central line.
Oh, no.
It was in the heat wave last summer, and I turned up like gross. And when I arrived, I was like, I won't hug you because I'm sweating. She was like, oof, good. And it turns out actually she hates hugs and touching other people.
Oh, lol.
And she's really like, she would never eat something off the floor or whatever. But anyway, as we were talking, she said, some of my friends get five times more done in a day than I would. But they always let themselves down with their hair. And like, she gets her hair done, does her hair, which obviously takes ages over. Every day. And we laughed because obviously there's a point she's making there, because I'm getting a lot done that day, but look at the state of my hair. Like, basically it was a big old slab, my great big curly like thatch of a wild nest of hair next to this perfect hair. And I was like, it's just perfect. But I wasn't offended by that. I have got wild hair. I don't care. I'm one of those people that gets five times more done in a day than her. And also, I think, as much as I've said I've just chosen to be someone who's more productive, I am trying to be not less productive, but have less in
switch
my day.
Off.
Just have less in my day. Honestly, it's my New Year's resolution is to do less.
Yeah.
Which sounds ridiculous.
No.
And already it's proving so effective. If
really?
I give myself three things to do in a day and you end up with this spare half hour, I'm happier. I'm finishing big tasks, not just chipping away at small things that take 5 minutes. Honestly, I'm trying to leave a day a week, which is a working day, but where there's no meetings in the diary. Also, I'm trying to travel a bit less.
Where are you traveling? Just with work?
Well, no, I travel a lot for work, and I kind of have to travel a lot for work. But, like, it's really nice to have, like, well, thank you so much for coming here. But,
okay.
Like, today and tomorrow, I'm not even popping into town for a meeting.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a lot out of your day. Well, it takes ages out of your day, but also I'll read my phone all the way to the train, and then I'll listen to something on the train, or I'll read something. And I'm never not, you know, I don't feel like I've got time to just sit in transit to places.
Yeah.
And just not being that traveling means you can be focused on the thing that's happening to you as it's happening so much more easily than if you're breaking your day up with little bits of movement, traveling all the time.
But I think that is a self-employed thing, because I get this where you, I'll do this, I'll go to meet all my friends because I work from home, will think that you almost don't do anything.
Yeah.
Whereas, so what happens is if you go to work and you've got like a 9-to-5 job, you leave in the morning and you get there and you stay there all day. Whereas what you do is probably what I'll do is also, because I do so many random things, like I'll have a PT client in Clapham Junction, and then I'll go record a podcast in North London, and then I'll have a meeting in Central London, and none of those things are to do the same.
Yes.
And then I haven't actually done any of the shit I need to do, which is all my emails.
And then
you're up at weird times.
Yeah, doing the...
Just no routine.
Emotional fatberg of admin done.
Yeah.
Chipped away at.
I can't bear it. The other thing I do, though, which is my priority, is I wake up really early so I can have a nap.
Oh, lovely. That is
because
nice
naps life. Really help me. So I'll get up, well, I say really early, I'll try and get up at like 6.
Yeah, that's really
And then
early
at 3,
yeah.
I have a nap. But I'd rather do that than sleep until 9, which I could do because no one's telling me to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
But, and it's honestly the better way to live. We've it's completely nice gone off on a tangent, haven't we?
It's a great one. Very relevant tangent.
Yeah, I didn't know how we felt
living
up
our
here.
Best lives.
Right, okay, adulting. So this is actually meant to be the whole podcast, although I've literally gone off the premise. But the premise is meant to be about what socio-political and cultural factors affect the way we grow up.
Right.
And I think that pretty much everyone who follows me will, if they followed me from Instagram, will have had some kind of relationship with food or their body that has made them, has impacted the choices that they've made. I've definitely had that. I mean, I wouldn't even be in my career if I hadn't at some point been like, I had a really arsehole boyfriend, I'm going to get a personal trainer, which in a funny way is an amazing thing that happened. So thanks to that ex.
We push to failure.
Yeah.
And from that, we grow stronger and different.
Yes.
We kind of sometimes, you need to go through, I think that's one feeling I have about like this kind of, this movement towards safe spaces and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% down with it because I'm talk about this in my new show a bit. I think, and complete inclusivity. Obviously, I want everybody to be welcome in most environments, but certainly in terms of like comedy especially, but just the world, it's not a safe space, and I think sometimes we should be upset by things and that's how we grow, because I think if you are always safe, you're not really challenging yourself, you're not looking at opinions outside of yours, and that genuinely reaching outside of your bubble of people who've had, in terms of your life experience, and only really talking to people who you already agree with, means that you are safe from people with really disgusting opinions. But unless you are really listening to people, even the people with horrible opinions, I don't think you're really growing.
Yeah.
And I think that you need to be broken sometimes. Well, it will happen to you even if you're only moving in as safe a spaces as you ever want, by heartbreak or grief. You know, there are ways in which just through living, because the world isn't safe. And it's only when actually you get completely knocked to pieces. It's so awful. And people who get knocked to pieces again and again and again, you know, I'm not advocating that. But ultimately, I think there's so much to be gained in terms of you're just becoming a person, when, because our cells all go away and we become completely new. We're 15 years ago, we were completely different cells. We've got less in common with our physical self from 15 years ago as we do with like our own bubble hat that's got some cells on it that at least are ours.
Do you know what, as you're saying that, it's just made me think, it's like, you know, when people don't let their kids, they wash their hands too much and they don't let them get any germs and then they just get ill.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If you're not exposed to germs or bad things, then I think it actually does do you a disservice. I do agree with that. And weirdly, all the worst things that have ever happened to me, like when I had a really bad, like, domestic abuse boyfriend, all the stuff, funnily enough, the best things came out of those awful times.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just me putting a positive spin on it. Or if genuinely going through some tragedy built does give you that resistance, like scar tissue, and then you get stronger.
I just think of it, I've started to, I don't know why, it's because I'm looking at some Duplo right now, but we're kind of, we're fragile.
Yeah.
Let's have our hands up and say we're fragile. We're not all strong. We're kind of, I'd like to think of it at the moment as being like made of Lego. And every now and again, someone will punch you emotionally and bits of the Lego will all shatter off everywhere. And you don't get to rebuild it exactly the same as it was before.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily make it better. Sometimes it will make it better, but it will always make it different. And that's exciting.
Yeah, so true.
That's being human.
I love that. That was great. Where can people find more of your great, great, great chat?
what a lovely way of putting it. I've got a podcast called Hoovering that's on Acast as well, or in all the places where you might find your podcasts. And I'm stand-up. Come see me do some stand-up.
What's your next show?
My next show is called, when is my next show? Or what is
both.
My next show is called Hench, and I'm previewing it now. And all my dates for gigs, and I must add from April onwards, actually, are on my website, jessicafosterq.com.
Where are you? Can I come to a preview?
I'd love that.
Oh my God, please.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, do. But okay. Like, it's got a long, it's got quite a way to go.
That's so, fine. Yeah,
okay,
great. Amazing.
In August, so it has to be ready.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I mean, it's fun to see a work in progress. You'll
yeah,
get to see
definitely.
All like, the working outs.
I love that. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And if you want to find Jessica, I will tag you as well in my below box thingy. What is it called? Comment section.
Yeah. I don't know. Don't
so that me. We can find you online. Amazing. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And I will also put a link up to when I'm in your podcast because
yes.
I'm on Hoovering.
Yay.
Yes. Amazing. Thanks so much for listening. Bye. You can say bye.
Oh, bye.